I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our bonus episode of the Proper Class podcast. I'm Hannah Chiswick.
And I'm Laura Checkley. And guess what? We ain't celebrating anyone on this here bonus ep, but our very own sweet selves.
Sorry, I don't actually know why I said that. I've been in isolation for 14 days and I don't know who I am anymore.
Oh, Christ, wish me luck. Yes, Laura is absolutely right. We don't have a guest for this bonus episode because we thought we ought to pop on and...
Well, tell you the fuck we are, basically, because no one knows us from Adam.
Well, they might know you, but they certainly won't have a clue who I am. We also wanted to explain why we wanted to do a podcast focusing on celebrating working class success.
Class is something I think we've always been obsessed about as a nation, and like it or not, it's still one of the main ways we categorise ourselves and others. As well as being one of the main social barriers to opportunity in education, in healthcare and health outcomes, to career and lifestyle opportunities, Hannah and I have known each other now for about 16 years. And over that period of time, I can't tell you how many times we've discussed the inequalities of class and the classism we have faced both professionally and personally. It's frustrating, and quite frankly, we want to talk about it.
About a year ago, Laura called me raging about an article she'd come across that said, being working class is something you try to escape from. And it pissed us right off.
It did.
It did. Because it's simply not true. We've always felt immensely proud of our working class roots, and it just rubbed us up the wrong way.
There is so much negativity attached to being working class, and we live in a system that, let's face it, is designed to keep us in our place. So we thought, enough's enough. Let's do something positive and talk about it. Talk about what it means to be working class. Let's celebrate being working class. Let's big up working class success stories and challenge some preconceptions and stereotypes as we go.
This is by no means class bashing. Not at all. We're just here to celebrate the hard work of the working class, and we cannot wait to meet with some of our country's best working class success stories.
I'm excited, are you?
Yeah, I'm really excited.
But first, we thought, well, we should probably introduce ourselves. That might be a nice idea. I'm gonna introduce Hannah. She's not actually heard what I've written here about her.
It's like a wedding vows.
Oh, dear, it actually is. It is.
And
it
quite might nervous. Get a bit...
Well, you should be. I'm joking.
Oh, Jesus.
No, seriously. When I first met Hannah, she was running a theatre. She was actually the youngest ever female artistic director in the country. 25, in fact. Now, I spent the first part of my career in theatre, which in my opinion is steeped in classism. So, you know, I often felt out of place, like I didn't belong. So when I first met Hannah, who spoke like me, wore hoops like me, and enjoyed the word cunt like me... I just knew I'd found my person. This woman has gone on to direct hundreds of plays and musicals in the West End, on Broadway, all over the world. You name it, she's been there, right? And I'm immensely proud of all of her achievements. But mostly I'm proud of how long she's survived an industry that has mostly tried to suppress and change her. She has fought tooth and nail to sustain her career. And if you ask any actor that has ever worked with her, they will tell you she is by a royal mile the best director they've ever worked with. Despite the classism in this industry, she has had a really successful career. But if truth be told, if she was an Oxbridge graduate or a middle-aged white man, I would not be having to do this intro right now because you'd know exactly who the fuck she was. She is my moral compass, my right arm, and the best human being you'll ever hope to meet, my best friend, Hannah Chiswick.
Oh, babe.
Did you
honestly,
cry?
No. That's amazing. It's like, this is your life. That's not how this
but
is your
when,
life went.
But when would you ever get the opportunity to write that about your best friend?
Oh, babe, honestly, that's isn't amazing. That right, here's yours. Ready?
It better be good. Better than that.
I'm going to rewrite it as I go. Laura is without doubt one of the funniest fuckers I have ever met. And somehow she has managed to turn that into a career. In all seriousness, she is one of the most talented actresses and comedians I know, and without doubt the hardest working. She trained in musical theatre, but her first love was always comedy, and she bravely moved away from her musical theatre career to focus on just that. As always, grafting all the way, working the comedy circuit and forming her own double act, Checkley Bush, with her great mate, Victoria Bush. Having had a career that has spanned 20 years, the last few years have seen her really skyrocket. And finally, the world is getting to see what I have known for a very long time, just how amazingly brilliant she is. Yeah. Most recently, you might have seen her on The Box, in Action Team, Military Wives, Detectorists, but she's probably best known for playing Terry King opposite Tom Davis in the brilliant King Gary. Of course, her biggest achievement is being my best mate for 20 years. And she is quite literally the human I couldn't do life without. Oh. My all-time bestie, Laura Checkley.
Woo!
Oh, that's nice, isn't
that's
it?
That's so lovely. That's so lovely. Although I am getting married next year at some point. It's the year after, but you're probably going to have to do all that again.
I know.
Without mentioning my CV. But thank you. That was lovely.
You are very
welcome. It's mad,
welcome.
Isn't it? When you said I've been in the industry for 20 years, I thought, fucking hell, no, I haven't.
I'm nearly 25.
20, well, I'm 21, actually, yeah.
I'm nearly 25. I did start young, listener. I'm not 900. But yeah, 25. I can't believe it. I can't believe I've hung in there for so long.
So I think what we should do next, really, is at the beginning of the show, we always ask one of our guests where they'd like to take us back to, somewhere that connects them to their working class roots. So me and Han thought, well, we should probably talk about that too. Why not? It'd be nice to know. And I actually don't know what you're going to say. So if you could take me back or us back this week, where would you take us, Han?
Oh, I would definitely take you to my Bubba's house. So Bubba is, for those who don't know, the Jewish word for grandma. My Bubba is an amazing woman. She was born in this country, but she was first generation immigrant. Her parents didn't speak English. She couldn't really read or write. She could, but not terribly well. Her parents didn't, like I say, even speak English. And she somehow managed, as an immigrant, quite orthodox Jewish woman, she managed to buy a tiny bit of a house, which was unheard of in the working class community that she grew up in, and especially for immigrant women. She bought this tiny bit with my granddad, an amazing man as well, who was a cabbie, a London cabbie. And over the years, they bought a bit more of the house.
Bit by bit.
Until they owned this sort of 4 or 5-bedroom house in Stoke Newington. Now, that house now, I mean, can you imagine what that's worth now? But then, you know, and they did it by having lodgers and by my grandma sort of, she used to make, to start off with, she used to make matchboxes and go round with like a tray and sell them in markets.
Oh, wow.
And stuff. And then bit by bit, she earned enough money to buy herself a little stall, and she started selling kids' clothes. And from that stall, she then managed to get a little shop. And it was just amazing woman, given her background and the lack of opportunities that were given to her. She just completely made this life. And that house, I still dream about it. I visit in my dreams a lot. It had a glass front door with like metal casing. It's hard to explain. It was like a big double door. And when it shut, the metal would rattle. And it's still to this day my favourite sound in the world.
Because
it would be the going into my grandma's house. And yeah. Jewish culture is very much based around food. And everyone would come. So on a Saturday, it would just be full of the family and kids, and we'd just eat and be together. And
were you there a lot?
A lot, yeah. Almost every weekend.
Yeah.
So she was in Stoke Newington, and my dad had defected to South London, which was, you know, big news. all his family stayed north. But yeah, we were there a lot. And we used to get in the car on a Saturday and drive through the Blackwall Tunnel. And that's still my favourite drive, because to me, that's like driving to, you know, my grandma's house. My all-time favourite place.
And do you ever go back there, pass it at all?
My aunt still lives very close in the road round the corner, and we do. And I took took my son to show it to him. I mean, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Because, you know, I think he was sort of three at the time. And he's like, all right. I mean, yeah. It's just a front door, isn't it? But yeah. I went with my cousin Sarah and we took our kids and had a picture at the gate. And I still feel... It's the centre of my childhood, that house.
It's interesting that you say you dream of that house a lot, because I think you and I had a conversation years back. Do you remember when my dad died, I kept dreaming of my nan's house?
Yeah.
And you'd said to me, Hannah's very good at psychology, listeners, but you'd said
amateur
to me...
Amateur psychology.
you'd said to me, well, that's where you felt safe. It's your safe place. And I mean, that leads me very nicely to where I'd take you back. Which is also my nan's house, which was 123 Braybrook Street in East Acton. And it was round the back of the Scrubs and the Scrubs prison. And like you, I was there every weekend. I was actually lived there for quite some time. You know, when growing up, we hit a really bad financial spot. My stepdad lost everything. And we lost our house, and we had to get rehoused by the council. And a lot of the time, and pre that, when my mum split up with my biological dad, we lived in Bracknell. And so I spent a lot of time in that sort of separation period and, you know, back and forth living with my nan on all of those sort of those moments in my life where we were just upside down. So for me, like you, Han, it was a place of safety.
Mm.
And I can remember every... God, I'm getting upset thinking about it.
I know, it's emotional, isn't it?
Yeah. Every corner. Oh, I'm going to have to stop.
Do you know what? One of the things I always feel really, really sad about, I have very few regrets in our friendship. I feel like we've been through so many things together, but I always feel so sad I didn't meet your nan.
Oh my God, you'd have loved her.
And I just feel like the similar thing, I'd love you to have met my bubba. Like, they feel like that those women have influenced us so much. And
oh
it feels
God.
Like.
I tell you what, my nan is in every character I do, pretty much.
Yeah.
In some way or another. Her wit, I mean, she's one of the best comedians I've ever come across.
Yeah.
But anyway, I remember every corner of that house. And, you know, my nan was quite a messy old mare. She really was. Like, my mum's super clean.
Oh,
you've been
John
around my mum's
Christ
house. I mean, she's, you know, one step away from just having all the polythene still on the sofa. You
yeah,
know? Like,
yeah,
she's
absolutely true.
She's really clean. And my nan was not. It was quite mucky. And, you know, often, you know, you'd find a mug in a drawer with a chicken drumstick in and, like, it'd be in her knicker drawer. And she'd just hide the mess. You know, sweep it under the rug, because she'd always say to me, there's more important things in life
that.
Than spending your life cleaning, Laura. And that place, God, I can still remember the smell, the carpet, how it felt under my feet. And you'd go in the front door and the stairs were literally two steps away from the front door. And my nan refused to get a new front door. It was odd. I think she just loved it because my stepdad had said to her, I think you need to get a new front door just to get some, you know, better locks on it and stuff. And she refused. And so what she used to do is, never forget this, put the ironing board against the stairs under the knob of the door handle. So, and that would be a
like
security.
A
but it was brilliant. I played football out in the Scrubs with the neighbours. It's the only sense of community I've ever known. My nan knew her next door neighbours, Sheila and Pat. And next to her was Mrs. Cross. Down the way was Lil Peplow. And she just knew all of that street. And it was incredible to grow up in. Horse and Cart used to come round every Saturday with the Shellfish.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'd have Winkles. I mean, it sounds so cockney, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But that felt like home. When she died, Mum said, I mean, she's left nothing. There is nothing but her wedding ring. But when they went into her closet to clear all her clothes out, there was hundreds of garments with labels on still, which she hadn't worn.
Wow.
She was a bit of a shopaholic.
She sounds so amazing.
But she lived for the moment.
I love that.
She lived for the moment. And yeah, it was her and that place. And that's where I'd take you. I'd take you to that house and you'd have a fried egg and chips. And you'd often worry if the eggs were off.
Yeah, right.
And all
okay.
of that, you know, but you just loved it. You know, every part of that, the garden up the back used to be a pigeon shed where my granddad used to raise pigeons. And she never really did anything but shoved a load of crap in it when he'd gone. And there was still pigeon shit in there and everything. She hadn't even cleared it out. I used to go there and I remember being upstairs for hours and just doing like, you know, playing little, and she'd leave you to it and she'd embrace my imagination.
Yeah.
She'd come upstairs and go, "What are you doing, kid?" And I'd tell her about, you know, a scenario I was probably playing out. She'd go, "You need this, dress up in this." And
oh, God.
It was, yeah, it was, you imagine as a kid.
It's fun, isn't it, about houses as well. Like, I know your parents have moved quite a lot and my parents have moved quite a lot. And that house of my bubba's was a house that she had been in when my dad was born.
Yeah.
And it was, she died from that house as well.
Yeah.
And I slightly feel wistful for those family houses.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
That's our nans. Yeah. And our lives, your life, my life is very much connected to that, but it's changed a lot, and something that we talk to our guests about a lot. Would you still consider yourself working class?
Well, I think this is what also whilst, yes, I do. I think whilst we're on this, and it's really important, Han, that you brought that up, you know, that we're now coming at this from a place of privilege.
Definitely.
You know, our lives have changed considerably, and I think it's important to note that. But the reason I really wanted to do this podcast as well, aside from all of the other stuff that we mentioned earlier, is that, yeah, what makes one working class? Is it how you're brought up? Is it what you've got now in front of you? For me, I'm very connected to my working class roots. I gravitate towards working class people. I still feel out of sorts if I go. Yesterday, I went for lunch with Tom Davis, who plays opposite me in King Gary. He went, "We'll go to Soho House," which is a private members bar. I still walk in that gaff.
I know.
Feeling like I'm a leper.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre. No one's treating me like it. It's all in my head. But I don't feel comfortable in those places. It's why, because, you know, earning a bit of money now, people go, "Why don't you get a Soho membership?" And I'm like, it just doesn't sit right with me. I want to go and sit in an old boozer. It's where I feel comfortable and it's the people I want to mix with.
Oh, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because I don't actually know what class I am. My mum's middle class, came from a middle class background, and my daddy's very working class. We grew up my early childhood was very working class. My dad was an actor. He's a brilliant actor.
He's an amazing actor. I can vouch for
that. But in our early childhood, he was having a lean patch. So he was always, you know, our early childhood was him signing on. And I have huge memories of, you know, digging down the back of the sofa for 50p so we could go to the pub. And we didn't have a car. You know, we never went abroad, all of those sorts of things that I think of as very middle class. And then as my childhood went on, my mum and dad made a bit more money, but that was probably more by the time my sister was a teenager. So I think my childhood and my sister's childhood are actually quite different. I mean, amazing childhoods, wonderful childhoods, but definitely not an affluent one. And I went to uni and I'm a theatre director, which is about as middle class as you can possibly be.
Yeah, yeah.
I went to a state school. I taught like this. I'm definitely viewed in the theatre as incredibly working class, probably more working class than I would be viewed in other industries, because theatre is such a middle class pursuit, definitely considered very working class. I have yet to be in a rehearsal process, me and you talk about this a lot, where someone doesn't imitate my accent. Go, yeah, Hannah, sure, Hannah. I'm very aware. I see people.
I had that loads when I was working in theatre. Yeah, I don't get it at all in TV now. No one comes up to me and goes, oh, what, Laura? I've had that a number of times in the theatre.
Happens to me all the time.
And it's not bashing the theatre world. It's not. No, it's just, I love theatre. What's happened. It's our experience and we're talking about it.
Yeah, you know? It's very much a thing. I can sometimes still see people wince when they hear me speak because I don't speak.
And when does that happen? When do you find that in meetings and stuff?
People look at my body of work and they think, oh, and they make some assumptions about who I'll be, and when they meet me, I'm not that. I'm probably more working class, and I don't sound or look, if I'm honest, how they expect. And I got asked a lot, still quite a male industry, you know, has being a woman really affected my career? Funny question. I don't know. I've never been a man, but I definitely think class has played a bigger part in people's perception of what is the type of work. I think things have changed. They are changing, but I think the idea that they have changed is definitely not true. So I think that's where I consider, I don't, if I'm really honest, feel super comfortable in very middle-class environments. I still feel uncomfortable. If I'm really honest, I still feel quite uncomfortable at my own press nights.
Yeah.
I feel uncomfortable going into Soho House. I feel like I'm being invited.
Yeah.
You know, those sort of things that you were talking about, those environments.
Yeah, yeah.
We have together worked with a lot of like amazing young people and from quite sort of working class backgrounds, and worked with them at a brilliant place called the Erdan Academy, which is such a diverse student body. It's a really exciting place to work. But one of the things that, you know, I find with those students often is they feel like a lot of that theatre world is closed to them. I try and 100%. Persuade them to go and, you know, pick up new plays, and I tell them about playwrights that represent them. But they don't want to step foot in the National Theatre Bookshop because they feel like, and I have to say, I mean, you worked at the National recently, but I still feel like a fraud when I go in there. I feel like other people are real directors and I'm sort of giving it a go. Something I wanted to ask you, actually, which is obviously, I was thinking about this yesterday, but we've been friends for a really, really long time now. Like, you know, we're not just saying it for the purpose of this one, like, you know, you're my best mate. Do you think partly having that sort of working class roots is part of what's made us such good friends? Do you think that's something that we share, or do you think that's been part of our friendship?
100%. You know, when I've had no money in the past, and I've been on the bones of my ass, and you've not had the money to give it to me, we found a way together. And you're the only person I could call up and go, I'm fucked. I'm so fucked. I can't even get on the bus to this audition.
Yeah.
I'll drive around. I'll take you, was your answer. You know, like we've
muddled through.
We've muddled through. And the people that are really, really close in my life, my everyday people, I call them, they get it.
Yeah.
They get it. They've been there. And they're the people that, they're my everyday people. That's all I can say. And that's how, you know, finding Tom Davis and James DeFrond, they're the writers of King Gary. When I came across them, they came across me 4-5 years ago now. They changed my life because no one in the comedy world, they all liked me. Oh, she's good. Laura's good. No one gave me a shot. Ever. No one trusted me with a lead role. And I was doing, you know, I was seeing my contemporaries soaring.
Yeah.
And we all started in the same fucking pubs. We all started at the same time. And I saw them soaring way above us. And they came along and they were like, well, you're just good. you don't have to be cool and in the gang. Yeah, I've never been in that comedy clique. I've always been looking over the fence going, can I come in now? Can I play? That's how I've always felt anyway. And I met those guys and they're the same people. That's why it works. That's why we love working together. And they didn't just write me a part because they felt sorry for me. They wrote me a part because they thought I was fucking good and deserved a shot.
Mm.
And they're the sort of people that change your career. They're the sort of people that change your path, someone that believes in you. And I think that's why you and I, we love teaching. We always go back to it because we just want to help and change
people's
lives and inspire them and go, look, it's fucking hard. We're not going to lie. It's hard and you have to keep on pushing and pushing and kicking those doors down. And if you can't sit at the table, build your own fucking table to sit at. Yeah. And invite us along and we'll all create some fucking great work together. And they're the people I just want to spend my time with. And when I met you, and I know we were joking earlier about wearing a hoop, but those things were important to me. I didn't see anyone. No one was looking like me or speaking like me. And that, and I know it sounds weird. Of course, I come across a few working class people, of course, along the way. But I didn't see a director and a female director. I could probably count on one hand how many female directors I've worked with, by the way.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that pisses me off. But yeah, so I just knew the minute we met that everything, it's our ethic, our moral compass, our what we want to do in the world and how we want to help others. But it's all rooted in our working class roots. And even though, yes, you know, I've bought my own pad now and I'm coming at it from a place of privilege.
It's interesting that, isn't it? I feel like it's such an important thing and I feel like it absolutely gels us together. A few things. First of all, like you referenced it earlier, money is a big thing. I think it's the thing we're still not supposed to talk about, money.
We always and talk about it, don't we?
Always.
Do you
always
remember my new job? I just got a phone job and went, you've never guessed how much I'm
but
earning.
Do you know what's so wonderful is like, I was talking to my son about money, actually. He's only six. And he's like, you know, just starting to think about money. And I was saying, it's not an important thing. I said, it's important to have enough to get through life. But he was watching some nonsense on YouTube and saying, oh, this guy's a millionaire and that guy's a millionaire. And, and I was saying, you know, Auntie Laura, we couldn't care less who's got what or who hasn't, as long as one of us has got enough to get by. And I realised that our friendship is so built around that not being the thing that not expressing this well, I feel like the thing that we admire in each other is like, you know, I think you're amazing. I've thought you were amazing back in the day when I was helping you carry your costumes to the upstairs of a pub, you know, when we were helping you get changed in a loo and all of that kind of stuff. And you know, I don't think you're any better now than I've always been your number one fan. And I know you're my number one fan. And built on the fact that we think that we're good humans as well. The other thing I think it's built on is humour.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Laughing. I mean, I can phone you up and tell you my misfortunes and we will have... I mean, me and you, you know, when your dad was dying, we always talk about that. When your dad was dying, like some of the laughs, you know, won't go into details, but me coming round to help you clear your dad's house out, howling with laughter, I mean, and tears and laughter.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's a huge
part. Do you
think,
just talking about laughter and humour in the working class... in working class society, do you think it is an important thing?
I think it's just a massive way of getting through life. I've always thought that me and you've definitely said it to each other. And
but I very rarely come across someone working class and they haven't got a sense of humour.
Very rarely.
Is that a sweeping statement? But that's how I feel.
It's a way of getting through things, isn't it? It's a way of like, I think it's an armour and it's a strength and it's a way of, you know, owning it and it's power. I think humour's power.
Some of the
sure.
best laughs for sure have been in the darkest moments.
So I suppose just before we, you know, wrap up, just wanted to like revisit why we wanted to do this a little bit. And I suppose it's mostly to, like we said, celebrate, really. I'm so proud of, like I say, my own sort of heritage, if you can talk about class in that way, is definitely mixed. My mum's very middle class. My dad's working class. We had a working class part of our lives. We had a middle class part of our lives. And I still feel like a real mix of those things, but very connected to that working class history, I think, and just wanted other young working class people, particularly young working class people, to feel I feel like when you're given space, which we both have definitely been given, and that you can either keep that space for yourself or you can stick your elbows out and make space for other people.
Mm.
And I feel like it's our duty to stick our elbows out as much as we can.
Yeah, and I think the guests that we have lined up, I think you'll hear their stories, and each of them along the way have stuck their elbows out.
Yeah.
Or they've built that table to sit at. And that's the main reason we're doing this. It's not to bash any other classes. It's not to sit here and say, woe is me. You know, we might get a bit deep sometimes and we'll absolutely get a bit angry sometimes. But we're here to celebrate the working class. And we're here to celebrate like-minded people and talk to them. And yeah, like Hannah said, inspire hopefully a few youngsters out there that might be feeling that there isn't any space for them. So I really, really hope that you enjoy the show. At the end of the show, we usually ask our guests who they'd like to celebrate, a working class hero from their life. So Han, if you could celebrate someone today, I think I know who you're going to say. Who would you celebrate?
Well, I feel like I'm going to bookend the way we started, but it has to be my bubba, Betsy Chiswick. And she was just a force of nature, a warm, funny, capable, bright, amazing woman. And with so few opportunities given to her, she made them for herself. And she was a wonderful mother, a wonderful grandmother, a fantastic businesswoman against all the odds. And she built her own little corner of the world that was my haven. So I miss her every day. Betsy Chiswick, your go.
Well, I think I'll be bookending it as well with my nan, who is, for anyone that knows me, my hero, my comedy hero, the woman I looked up to and thought, that's who I want to be like, as she was aiming a banana skin across the room at somebody for a laugh. I thought, that's who I want to be. She had a wicked sense of humour. She was hardworking. She was hugely talented. She used to be able to play the piano just by ear. She was a really talented singer. And she never got to do any of it. I really wish she'd have seen me be funny on telly because, well, I know she would have definitely have said she gets it from me. And I do. I look like my nan. Everyone says it. Like old mates from the cricket club always come up. I was up there the other week, actually. I went, you're just like your nan. You're just like Winnie. And I love it. She's like a stand-up comedian. I'd never forget as a child at house party. She had loved a house party. She'd cook for 17, 18 people Christmas Day. And then she'd do another load of food Christmas night because all the other people come around for a knees up. The house was, we're like sardines in this house, this tiny little house in East Acton. And she was at the centre telling stories. And I thought, I just want to be like that. And I miss her every day. And she's in everything I do. Mm. I always think, live for today. I'm terrible saving money. I'm terrible with any of that. And I'm just like her, and I wouldn't change a thing. So if I die, or when I die, have a look in my closet. There'll probably be loads of clothes with some labels on. You can have my engagement ring. Yeah, and her name was Winnie Morris, and I love her. Love her dearly. Well, that's us. That was lovely, wasn't it?
It was really, really lovely.
It was so nice to hear your story as well, Han. I mean, there's plenty more to cover still. I feel like we didn't.
I know, it's all right. We'll go to the pub and we'll carry on like we normally do. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us for this bonus episode. Join us fortnightly to hear the amazing people that we've been lucky enough to have as guests. And we're sure you'll enjoy listening to them as much as we've enjoyed talking to them. Take care.
Keep it classy, guys. The Proper Class podcast is produced by Michelle Farr-Scott for Rangabee Productions, edited by James Torrance, with music by Tommy Music. This episode was recorded at the Umbrella Rooms. Cheers, Ben.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.